Well, today is August 19th, and we're in Dawson City, Yukon. And this is Adriana Coyle and Mike Dalton are sitting at the table with George Shaw in George Shaw's home. That's just to let people know who we are.
You didn't have to mention me, Mike.
Well, you're a longtime friend, and I'm glad you're here so you can help me when there's something that I should ask Mr. Shaw on his, you know, his service here in Dawson. I know that you've known him for a long time, but you could probably help me a lot. At any rate, Mr. Shaw, you came to Dawson when?
I came first in 1937. Mm-hmm. Actually, I came from England in 1928, and I worked in Ontario. I worked on a farm for a year and a half, and it was the old adage of go west, young man, go west, so I went west. And of course, when I landed in the west, I was the green Englishman trying to make a living right after the bust of 1929. And I had quite some experience traveling all over the country, but finally I got settled down and I had a fairly decent job in Vancouver. And in 1937 I thought that one should go up north and see what it was like. And that is the time that I first came up here.
To Dawson in 1939?
In 1937.
37, excuse mm-hmm. me.
I wanted to work for myself, that's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I did.
Did you have a trade? Had you been
well,
in trade
yes,
school?
I had a trade. I was a millwright in a sawmill when I left Vancouver. Came up here and I worked for 6 months and then went mining. And went broke, of course. That was the first time I went broke at mining. Subsequently, I went broke 5 times. Till I found out that I wasn't too good a miner. Either that or I had poor ground. You can take it either way. If you have good ground, well, you're a good miner if you make money at it. And of course, if you don't make money, well, it's not the ground, it's the miner.
Yeah, that's right.
So then I went in the sawmill business, which I was in for about 12 years. I had better luck at that. Uh-huh. I knew what was in the logs, in each log, much better than I knew what was in the ground. In other words, I knew footage much better than I knew yardage.
In 1937, when you came to Dawson, Dawson City then was the seat of government for the Yukon
yes,
Territory.
Yes, it was the capital of the Yukon. They had a population, I would judge, about 1,500 people at that time, not counting the influx during the summertime when the dredges were operating and mining was at
so
full swing.
So this was a stable population of about 1,500?
Oh yes, I'd say it would be about 1,500. And now that's purely a guess, I didn't count them, but I judge it to be about that many. The summer operations, they were about, the large company employed about 400 or 500 men. And then there were many, many individual miners which were around. So it was quite a it was quite a stable community. And it was just a delightful place to live in.
And then, in 1937, then there was no road between Whitehorse and Dawson
no,
City. You had to reach Dawson by river.
That's right. There were two ways of getting in from Whitehorse. Of course, to Whitehorse, it was taking the boat from Vancouver, then taking the train, which took, I think, 11 hours and cost $11 at that time. And then from there, it was to come on these old rickety Fairchilds aircraft, which was $100, which of course $100 was a great deal of money in those days, and very few of us had it coming in. In fact, very few of us had it going out. The stage was $40, which took about 10 days, between 7 and 10 days, traveling behind a tractor and 3 or 4 sleighs. And that's the way I first came in. Some of my friends walked in from Whitehorse. I'm referring from Whitehorse
was
only.
Was it were they open sleighs?
Oh, just an open sleigh, and there was a bunch of buffalo robes. And, mm-hmm. and it was quite interesting. It was in the spring, of course, when the influx started to come in. And going through the woods, of course, you'd have to hit brush and trees, and the snow would fall down on you. And in the daytime, it'd be warm and everything would melt, and then at night it'd freeze. So here you were talking about a sleigh that had a bed of 20 feet long and about 5 or 6 feet wide, and I don't know how many bodies were on there, possibly 15, all trying to find room to sleep. And when you lifted one buffalo robe, you practically at night, after a couple of days, they all froze almost solid, that you lift up the whole works. But most of us are young and tough in those days, and it didn't hurt.
Did families travel in that way also?
I never at any time knew of any families traveling that way. I don't know how the families got in. I never really, generally speaking, the husbands came in and the families came in later on the boat. Yeah, in the summer. The first boat, there were usually women and children on it, and these people would meet their families.
Well, these stages that would leave White Horse, you say, they'd take about 7 to 10 days to reach Dawson City?
Yes, that's what it
then
would take.
Then they would go from, it was just like the old stages with the horses, except they had a tractor.
It was just the same thing, except they had a tractor.
And
they'd take you by cart.
Overnight?
No, you never stopped. They stopped the fuel, that's all. And sometimes in the nighttime you'd have to get out there and stand on the side of the sleigh where it was sidling or going through some glacier. It was no stop, it was a straight shot through. You ate frozen sandwiches, you mean you couldn't keep them thawed. that's what you lived on.
So there was no stopping in roadhouses to sleep or to warm up?
No, none at all. It was a straight shot right through. And the drivers, there were two drivers, one of them was Phil Hickey, you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
And a fellow named Norman Hartnell. I think he later became a pilot too, but it's not this Hartwell that was recently in the news. This Hartnell. And they'd take turns driving the tractor, and it was a D4. And I think it had three sleighs on, the mail and freight and the passengers on the back one. And it wasn't covered up or anything, it was wide open. You just got under the buffalo robes.
When you came the first time in 1937, was it in the dead of winter or was
it was in March.
It was a little bit warmer, more comfortable riding then.
Well, it wasn't bad. It got quite cool because the tractor went too fast to walk. And as you know, a tractor making tracks in new snow, because it was, you know, every couple of weeks it traveled, I think. Well, they never had a packed down trail, so it was, you'd have to run pretty hard to keep up with it. It'd probably go about 6-7 miles an hour, so you'd have to run, and then if you slipped, you were out of luck.
So the stage ran every 2 or 3 weeks then?
I imagine it met each boat, I'm not sure, but each boat, I think there was 10 or 14 days between each boat. It was the Princess Nora that was traveling in the wintertime then. The Princess Louise only went on in the summertime.
It cost you $40 to make this trip.
If $40, well, it cost about $40, I think, or $50 from Vancouver to Skagway, then $11 from Skagway to White Horse, and then $40 from White Horse to Dawson City. Now that was in 1937, and we landed right outside Dawson on the bar, on the gravel bar of the Yukon. Now later on, of course, they became more sophisticated with their aircraft. They had the old Ford, tri-motored Ford used to come in, and Blancas and different other kind of planes. In fact, most of them they wrecked, and quite a number of the pilot that I came up with, he was later killed a couple of years later, taken off with Chappie, or used to have the corner story. Remember Ginny's father? Ernest Chapman.
Yeah.
He was going up the Wind River with supplies for the trappers, and they took off, and something happened, and they crashed in right after takeoff.
Mm-hmm.
Lionel Vines was the pilot.
How many years did that stage operate in that manner?
Well, I don't think it operated many years after, that is, taking passengers, many years after that, maybe 2 or 3 years. And then, as I say, the aircraft became, the rates were cheaper. In the fall of 38, there was a war between two rival air transportation companies, the White Pass and Northern Airways. And they kept competing with each other and dropping the fares to pick up the trade going from here outside in the fall. And most of these 400 men that were working for the company would go outside. And the fares went to as low as $35. Today it'd be $45, tomorrow $35. Well then, Northern Airways cracked up two of their planes. And I think they had four. The other two were inoperative. So then immediately the White Pass in competition, they raised it another $10. And because with the boats running on a regular schedule, you had to be in Whitehorse the day before. If you missed being there that particular day, you missed the train going from Whitehorse to Skagway. So they were really kept busy for 2 or 3 weeks or a month.
Yes.
You don't know how many years that they had been going this way before you came in.
No, I don't know. But I would say they had been going since tractors first became commonly used. You're dependable enough to travel.
We came in 1911, March 1911, but we came on the stage.
Yes, that's right. Horses.
Horse-drawn stage. Mm-hmm. Now, when you came, did you stop at any roadhouses?
Yes, we stopped overnight.
Every night?
Mm-hmm. And then they also made a place where you could eat at noon, and then they would change horses there, you see.
Mm-hmm. Usually. Well, that was a little more comfortable for the passengers, but yes. Not quite as fast, probably. The horses.
Oh, well, we made it as fast as the tractors
did. Oh, I think they would make it faster.
Yeah. But it seems to me that they had a contract for weekly mail at that time, mm-hmm. and so they made it, you know.
Oh, horses would be faster.
Well, would the horses trot? They wouldn't just walk.
They'd gallop, wouldn't they? They'd trot.
Every once in a while they'd gallop, and then they would walk. But if it was real cold, of course, they never galloped because they would never allow that. Mm-hmm. They were very strict with the horses here in the early days. They couldn't go out and get wood when it was over 40 below. They never allowed.
Well,
school bell didn't ring then either. It was 45 below. There was no school bell.
Was that just to signal the students to stay home?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering what year it was that they started with the tractors.
I wouldn't know that. Maybe Sox Troberg would know something like that. Have you spoken to him?
No, I have not.
Well, Sox was recently the representative from. His name is Ralph Troberg. They call
he's
him Sox.
He's here. He isn't here.
Yes, he's here.
Somebody said he was coming.
No, I saw him. I was speaking to him yesterday.
Oh.
And
talked to his doctor.
He represented the Yukon at the exhibition of Calgary, and he did a real crack up job.
Oh, he's back
wonderful
from
job.
There.
Oh, sure, yes, and he was. Really liked it. I didn't know when I first was talking to him about it whether he would, but he really liked that. And he had the opportunity to talk with the Queen and Philip for about 10 minutes, and he was really happy about that.
But he might know when the tractors.
He would know. Period. He would know. He was born here.
We didn't know that, or we would have tried to get hold of him.
Oh yes, yes.
And we saw his daughter the other day.
Yeah, Leona.
Yeah.
She
lives right next door.
Oh, does he?
Mm-hmm. Got a little cabin.
Next door here?
Next door to Leona, his
Leona.
Daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She lives up with the in the Dines'
mm-hmm.
house.
Mm-hmm.
But the road then from Whitehorse north toward Dawson, was that built in 1 or 2 years, or was that just gradually extended this way?
The road?
Yes.
Well, first the road was built from from Mayo to Whitehorse, and that would be built then. Oh, I'd say the first trucks probably rolled. I'm guessing this, but I'd say 1950, 1949, 1950, and it was built specifically to take the ore from United Keno Hill Mines at Elsa and Calumet. And it was be about 4 years later before they made the connection between Whitehorse and this road at Stewart Crossing that caught this road going to Whitehorse. They still call that the the White Horse Mail Road.
But there was a road then leading south from Dawson City to...
Not until... Well, there was this trail. I don't think you'd call it a road. They're all trails. And I only think they could be used in the winter time, although Adrienne might know if there were anything in the summer, but I kind of doubt it.
No, there wasn't.
It was just a winter road. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do for a winter road is pick out a flat spot with no trees. Mm-hmm.
But the... I think it was it 1951 when you came here, Adriana, mm-hmm. for the opening of the Taylor Highway.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, well, I was at that, too.
You were there.
Yes, I remember when we got there, the mayor was the official opener for this end, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And who was it now you had? Colonel somebody was... representing Alaska.
E.B. Collins was there, I know that.
And Fred Collins?
E.B.
E.B.
He was a lawyer.
And we had forgotten the tape.
Yes.
And we went in and saw Mrs. King, mm-hmm. and we took the ribbons from some of her lingerie, and that's what made the made the ribbon across the road, which was cut at that time.
Yeah,
is that right?
Dorothy King, yeah. Dorothy King. So we borrowed the ribbons from her lingerie to put the ribbon across, so we had something to cut. That's exactly what happened.
And we had a bunch of our troopers there, and
some of yours. Yes, that's right. There's the RCMP were there, and the. What do you call it? The Road Patrol? Alaska? Alaska Patrol.
Yeah, they call them Highway Patrol.
Highway Patrol, that's right.
They call them Alaska State Troopers now.
I think some of them got into someone's sluice boxes over on the other side, didn't they? Or something happened that
time.
Well,
somebody did, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was them or not, but then they were helping themselves.
But then you were in Dawson, back to your arrival here in Dawson, you went into the, finally after mining, you went into the sawmill business.
Not quite, no. I went into mining, my final gasp at mining in a big way, and I got tractors. And I had to pay the sawmill to pay the debts on the mining, and the mining was a flop. So I didn't have any sawmill business left, so I had to get into something else. So I used to help George Murdoch in his store. We have been friends for since we first came in. And he wanted to go outside, and so I purchased the business from him, and that's how I got into this jewelry business.
But then, let's go back to when you were first elected. I think you were elected alderman in Dawson City.
It was 1949 and 1950, I think 1949.
And that Dawson City then reorganized as a city?
That's right. It was operated by the territorial government, and it was imminent that they would move the capital to Whitehorse. So they wanted the city to operate its own affairs. It's pretty hard to try and operate any place from of the size this was, which was the largest area. It wasn't the largest at that time because the influx due to the impact of the Alaska Highway was starting to build up Whitehorse. So the controller or the commissioner had been the de facto mayor of the city for, I guess, since 1908, or I'm not quite sure just what time it was, but it was some in the early teens. Mm-hmm. And the government had operated the city, and that was when the charter was given back to the city, and they had an election for mayor and three aldermen.
And you were one alderman, and who was the first elected mayor then?
Howard Firth.
Well, he wouldn't be the first elected mayor of Dawson.
He was the first,
because there were early in the early
prior
days
to
were,
prior to that, yes.
Yeah. So Mr. Firth was then mayor, and
that's right. He was the mayor. Jimmy Meller, Tim Cole, and myself were the were the three aldermen.
Jimmy Meller.
Yeah.
Tim Cole.
M-E-L-L-O-R, isn't it? Meller.
Meller, yeah. M-E-L-L-O-R.
And Tim Cole.
Tim Cole.
And George Shaw.
Yeah.
And the mayor was
Howard Firth.
Howard Firth.
Born and raised here.
That's right. You met him, didn't you?
No, we didn't get to see him yesterday.
They were in.
Do you recall, and I know you weren't here at the time, but do you recall who the first mayor of Dawson City was back in the early days?
No, I really
did
you don't. Ever?
I don't know.
I could look that up. And I've read it, but I just don't
recall. You could find that in the archives someplace. There was one fellow, though, that was quite active in politics here. The working man's candidate, he called himself. What the heck was his name? He was mayor of Edmonton for years and years and years.
Is that Conley?
No. Just shut that up for a minute. I might be able to tell you that.
Clark, Clark.
Well, this is a fellow named Joe Clark. He was Edmonton mayor for a long, long time. But here I have some of his literature, you know. He was the opposition candidate for the Yukon Council, the working man's candidate. So he was really active in politics all his life. And he was one of the longest elected mayors, I think, in the city of Edmonton.
The people's fearless champion.
Oh, yes.
We were to that rally then.
Oh, you were,
right? Those great big rallies they had.
I don't know what year that is. Does it state that?
On the back it's written, this is Clark's card when he ran for council 40 years ago, but no date.
Longer than that, though, because we left here in 1911.
Mm-hmm. Your vote and influence respectfully solicited for Joseph A. Clark, opposition candidate for the Yukon Council. Electors, vote for the man you know to be your sincere advocate and one who has pledged to make a determined stand against all the oppression and unfair enactments now practiced by officials in the Yukon Territory. The working man's candidate, Joseph A. Clark, the people's fearless champion.
Yeah, isn't that something?
And they used to have these rallies, you know, in the Palace Grand.
They did.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite interesting. I heard he died a few years ago. And
now, this was probably when he was in the Yukon.
Yes, that's when he started up.
Mm-hmm. And that's closer to 50. It's closer to 60 years.
Another fellow that went high into political office was Patello. He was a lawyer up here. And He ended up as Premier of British Columbia.
Duff
Patello.
I understand that some of the tourists are surprised that you have running water in this town and a water system. Do you know the history of the water system in Dawson or anything about it?
No.
Alibi in the name of Williams came down from Dawson. And
except they decided they wanted water here, so they started up a syndicate. And
this was the first years of Dawson.
This was the first years, and they started this water system. It was quite expensive. I forget how much it was a month, but it was very expensive for those days. But they did have a water system, and they must have had one for 60 years. And funny thing is that they put it in now just the same way as they put it in years ago.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a circulating
wooden
system?
Staved pipes. Well, they have a circulating system now to a point. That is to conserve the water. But at that time there was no return, which there is now. But the point is to try and keep the temperature up, because if it slows down the tall, it's in permanently frozen ground. It has to be wooden staved pipes. You can't put steel pipes in, because they would break and the frost would heave them out. Whereas wooden pipes have a great deal of more give to them.
Yeah.
They're more pliant. And they are using just the same kind of pipe as what they used when
they
first started.
Are they covered and insulated? Or?
No.
Just
put them in the ground, the dirt on top, and away you go.
And the water, the source of water then is what, the Klondike?
The same reason, the Klondike. They have wells just by the powerhouse right alongside the river.
Mm-hmm.
And it is strained, and it's very good drinking water. In fact, I don't think you'll find any better water any place or any more pure than what this is.
The Klondike runs, it doesn't freeze to the bottom in the winter.
No.
It runs.
No, it's too large a body of water. It runs steady.
Mm-hmm.
Some winters it's almost just at the power plant, whereas fast it might be open most of the winter.
I see.
if it's a mild winter.
Then electricity, the early days in Dawson, the first years of Dawson, they also had electricity.
They had electricity. Oh, yes, they had.
Was that water-generated power?
It's power-generated, yes. It was water. They had a... they picked up the water at the what they call the South Fork intake, and they ran along a ditch. There were two ditches, one the North Fork, one the South Fork. I can't tell you just how long they were, but possibly 5 or 6, 7 miles. And they raised the water maybe 150 feet or something like that. And it was generated at what they call the North Fork Power Plant. Now, when I came in here, they had three turbines in there, each of, I think, about 5,000 watts capacity, or 5,000 horsepower. I think they generated about a total of either 12 or 15,000 horsepower when the three turbines were operating.
And would this operate in the winter as well as summer?
Operated in the winter. And they used to, you see, what the way they used to do it was they raised the water in the ditch. They regulated so there was...
So it would be high level.
So it would be a high level. And they'd keep it at that level until it started to freeze. As soon as it froze over, in what they considered was sufficient strength to hold the weight right across, they'd drop it about 6 inches or a foot. So there was this vacuum there, and that ran all winter and never froze up. Quite clever, you know. Yeah. But
well, as far as I remember, we've had that system here since 1902, 1903. 70 years ago, we had light in
our house. There's a history on all of that, you know.
Is there a well-documented history?
Well-documented history on all of it. You'd have to dig for that, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I came here in 37, yeah. And to me, being coming from outside, your custom is just a normal thing to have running water.
Mm-hmm.
Up here, it was a luxury. I know the first house I bought just prior to getting married was had running water in, and that was really something. It was an expensive proposition. I think I had to pay $1,900 for the house. It would seem quite funny now to pay $1,900 for a house, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But that was sure a lot of money for a house in those days.
Mm-hmm. But you had electricity and running water.
Had electricity
and running water. I don't remember having running water in our place in 1902, but I do know we had electricity and telephone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we had a telephone here too, yes, all the time.
Did the telephone system extend out to Bonanza and El Dorado?
It extended... Well, there were only the company out there that you could afford to use the telephone because it was their a subsidiary of theirs was the Yukon Telephone Syndicate, you see. So they had telephones way out in the camps and they were in constant communication. But everything had to go through a switchboard in Dawson through the operator. It was quite handy, you know, if you were looking for Joe Blow or Tom Doakes. You'd tell the operator he wasn't home, well, you know where he is? Well, I think he's over at such and such. So she'd try that, and most of the time you'd get.
Well, when we were mining in 1909 at 30 above Bonanza, we had telephone up there.
Mm-hmm.
And telephone in our home.
So Dawson had telephones, electricity, and running water. How about a sewer system?
Is yeah, that, sewer system fairly, also. Oh, yes.
Fairly new?
Sure. Sewer system, for example, you had the main lines running down the avenues. That's all just in one direction. And if you wanted a sewer, it would say you were in the middle of the block. Well, you just have to build it yourself to connect with the main line.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had running water, you had to have a sewer. You couldn't have running water without a sewer, except in the summertime, summer service,
mm-hmm.
because there was no... means of getting rid of the water, and you just had a glacier. So you had to have a sewer. And of course, that gave
so that was installed about the same time as the water system. Must have been.
Well, the whole thing, I think, came about just about the same time. That's documented history, too, you know, from the archives. You could find out exactly when and how.
And where would that be? In Whitehorse?
That would be in Whitehorse, yes.
Of information
yes,
on
that would be the source. You get all the information in that right there.
How many people live in Dawson now, approximately?
Well, I couldn't say for sure, but I would judge to be about 800 people, permanent. In the summer it swells, of course, and in the winter it goes down.
Mm-hmm. And what's the livelihood of the population here, the 800?
Well, it's varied. There are some, a few in business for themselves. There are others that possibly was mine in the summertime and spend the winter here. There is quite a large native or Métis population now. Most of those people, I think, would be on some form of welfare or grants or what have you. And there is a fairly relatively large government employment program also. This is the headquarters, you see, for many hundreds of miles of road maintenance.
Yes.
So they have to...
I thought perhaps you would serve as a service center for certain activities.
Well, it is.
Like
it is. You have, for example, with the government, you have the two governments actually involved. You have the federal and the territorial, and the federal will take in post office and...